Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Man, how many years have we been doing this? But it's like I said that before. This is the gathering show, the first Thursday of every month, where we discuss things related to the afterlife. Some of you email in your personal experiences and questions. Others, we would love you to call in. The number here, if you want to call in and ask a question or just share an experience, is 888-627-6008. And we can get going with some of the things that people have shared with us. I mean, I'll start off with John wrote that, he said, I have two experiences. Both involved my girlfriend, who died in a car accident at the age of 21. We were extremely close. Several years later, I walked into an abandoned furniture building where I worked during college. I sat down on the steps where she and I would often visit during my lunch break. It suddenly felt like she was there. I know how places can stir memories, but this was entirely different. I walked away and the presence left. I returned a few minutes later and again felt her presence. A few years later, on her birthday, I was thinking about her as I walked into a bar. As I sat down, the DJ played a very rare song that had a special meaning for both of us. I was overwhelmed by the same presence I had felt before. Coincidental, perhaps, but in both incidents, the circumstances, the place, the song, and the birthday and the overwhelming presence I felt were all very unusual and deeply comforting. Over many years, and having lost many loved ones since, I only felt such a presence on those two occasions.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, John raises an interesting thing. A lot of people will write something off, you know, as a coincidence because of that. But as he put very well, you have to step back and look at the circumstances, you know. I mean, they were in the same place, you know, with the same song, and then the birthday and an overwhelming presence, and, you know, he walked away and the presence was gone. So when you step back, that looks to be pretty interesting. You know, we talk a lot here about end-of-life experiences, right? I mean, near-death experiences and deathbed visions and so forth. And there's a well-respected scientific organization, Society for Scientific Exploration, and it's made up of academics. I'm familiar with them because Dr. Browdy was the editor of their peer-reviewed journal, the Journal for Scientific Exploration. And over the years, he asked me to write a couple of book reviews, and I did. So they send me their journals when it comes out. And frankly, you know, it's written, the journal was written for an academic audience, and the material is pretty dry, and I usually skim through it. But in this week's journal, there was an article that was written by Rupert Sheldrake, who's a very famous researcher in this field, along with Pam Smart and Michael Nam. And it's about end-of-life experiences with animals, a study that he did. And I never thought of that before. You know, and I printed it out. And, you know, it's the same thing that we study in humans, you know, last goodbyes, last visits, a last rally, retreating into solitude and things like that. So I thought maybe I could read a couple under the category of last goodbyes. It says, you know, the dominant feature in many of the case reports is that pets seek to say goodbye to their owners or other loved ones. Typically, these pets were already very weak, and they die soon after this final farewell. He cites Gaddis, and Gaddis reported such a case during the prime of its days. Tomcat Pussy was taught by the couple who kept him to hold out a paw to shake hands. As Pussy grew older, he suffered from severe chronic dysentery and had to be put down. When the vet arrived, the cat dragged himself out of his basket, walked straight to his sorrowful keepers, and held out his paw to each of them in turn. He then crept back into his basket, buried his head in his paws, and awaited his fate. And then there are tons of, you know, of similar reports. I had some firsthand experiences with this because, as you know, like Fran used to foster feral cats, you know, for a shelter. So we'd have our house filled with 8 or 9 cats at a time, you know, like all in cages, and we try to domesticate them, and then you were supposed to give all the cats back when they were domesticated. But somehow, knowing Fran, that one or two always stayed with us, you know, and that's why we accumulated so many cats over the years. But anyways, there were two cats, Popeye and Olive. And they were both like really skittish. I don't know if they were abused, or it was years and years of before we could even touch them. You know, we were very, very patient. And then Popeye, unlike all the other cats, he would never hop up in your bed. You know, all the other cats, that's all they wanted to do, never up there. And then Popeye grew older, and then he was getting ill. And then he got very ill, and all of a sudden he hopped up on my bed, but not only hopped up on my bed, but slept on my pillow and like snuggled my face. I mean, totally uncharacteristic, you know, and he did this for, you know, he was doing it with just me, like when not Fran, which is odd because of the cats, you know, love Fran. And he did this for like 3 or 4 consecutive nights. And then on the next day, he just disappeared into a closet, you know, and passed away. So I thought that was his way, you know, of saying goodbye. Sort of, you know, like people. There are, here's another account. Our dog Coyote was dying. The boys were grown and moved away, as it should be. My husband and I were sitting vigil. Out of the blue, our elder son called and said he was driving through town, and although it was late, he wanted to drop in. He lived hours away. Another son called and took a zip car home from the city. My husband and I had been sitting vigil for 2 days, giving our beloved dog all the care and permission to go. Only once the boys were home, Coyote visibly relaxed and crossed over. It seemed that he couldn't go until the whole family was together and were present. It was uncanny and beautiful. I know she called out, you know, and called the boys home. That's, we hear that, like in reports where people that are near death, they hang on, you know, until the family is there.
In some cases, when they hang on until everybody leaves.
Right, exactly. It's true, because they don't want the others, you know, to miss them. I mean, we can get back to some of those, but let's read some other accounts that people wrote in. And by the way, as I mentioned, if you want to call and ask a question or share, the number here is 888-627-6008. So Peggy writes, my husband Ken passed away March 27th of 2022. We were married December 28th, 1983, and spent over 38 years in love with each other. The years were not easy ones. Ken spent the last 13 in a wheelchair with me by his side. Our love just grew stronger. He handled everything with grace. I miss him completely. Over the past year, I received a few signs from him. The first was a song, Groovy Kind of Love, by Phil Collins. There's a line in the song, when I'm in your arms, nothing seems to matter. My whole world could shatter. I don't care. His whole world did shatter, and for 13 years, he always smiled and his eyes would light up when he looked at me. I cried when I heard the song. The second song was Get It While You Can by Janis Joplin. I woke up with a whine from the song playing over and over in my mind. Don't you turn your back on love. I didn't recognize where the whine came from. I had to search online to find the song. It was probably only 6 months since he passed, so I told him I wasn't ready. And besides, how would I ever find someone who could live with his ghost? No one could possibly come close to loving me the way that he did. The third sign came recently, A Song for You by Leon Russell. The whine that got me is, I love you in a place where there's no space or time. I had just started reading books from FFF and shortly ran across Bob Ginsburg's book, My Life Here and There. And then she says, I need to sit with someone who can connect us. I feel he needs to tell me something and I need to know he's near. I think she meant she needs to connect with me, but she needs to connect with somebody that can get a message, you know, from a husband. But,
but she's getting them.
Yeah. And certainly not the first time the three of us have heard about meaningful songs, right? I mean, it just it happens all the time.
I was just going to say, I read that book, and very likely she wants to connect with you.
Yeah, right. Well, thanks for that plug, Tom. we did take a phone call. We have Deborah from Ohio. Hi, Deborah.
Hello there. Really
Hi.
Bad connection. Hi. Getting a really bad connection, so I thought I would call in, but it's not any better. You freeze up quite a bit on my computer, and then it gets garbled on the phone. So I'm going to hang up and try the computer again.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Deb. We have, let's see. That was probably their internet, connection. Here's an account. Several months after my father passed, I was lost in thought while driving home on what is normally a busy street. It was oddly empty. Suddenly, a great blue heron swooped down low in front of my SUV, and I felt a huge whoosh of energy passing through my body. I was startled awake, overcome with emotion and a knowing that it was my dad. I don't know why. I did not grow up with any religion or any form of spirituality. So this strange, sudden knowing was really hard to reconcile or explain. I sobbed and heaved for a while. And when I got home, I even called my husband. I didn't know why I got so emotional. I felt that I did everything in my power to ensure my father that a good departure. To ensure my father had a good departure. I visited him during his illness with my three young kids in tow. And near the end, I was there to support my mom in his care. And I also asked him the card questions like, if you could live your life over again, what, if anything, would you change? I was at peace with his departure, and I knew that I did not want him to suffer any longer. As time passed, I started to see the heron more and more regularly, especially as I progressed and became the sole caregiver with my mom with Alzheimer's. For months, I grappled with the idea of selling my mom's car. She was starting to have minor fender benders and was starting to be a danger to others and herself. I was forced to sell her car while she was out of town, and I was distraught and conflicted, knowing how upset she'll be. With the CarMax check in hand, I wondered aloud at a red light, Dad, did I do the right thing? Mom is going to be so mad I sold her car. And just as the light turned green and I proceeded through the intersection, a heron flew by above. You got to be kidding me. I laughed and cried aloud. Over the next several painful years of my mom's disease, I have seen countless, I've had countless of heron sightings, usually at the most fortuitous times and unusual circumstances. I mean, she says, who sees herons in January in Chicago? Got a point. Often when I was depleted, feeling hopeless and alone in her care, and mom died in April of 2002. And on the day of her ash spreading, 30 plus relatives gathered outdoors at the pier to board a boat to Catalina Island. As we assembled for a family photo, I looked up and saw a heron fly overhead. I called to my husband, honey, look up. Once skeptical, my husband now believes too.
That's great.
Yeah, that's from Jean.
That's lovely.
It is. Let's see, we have...
You know, we have a framed print in our living room of blue herons. So maybe he's visiting with us too, her dad.
It could be. Another account of going back to the pets of last goodbyes. Let's see one here. We lived next door to a family who had a female black lab. Her name was Oreo. She was such a gentle dog, and whenever her people would go away and leave her at home, my husband would go over, feed her, and take her for walks. Only once or twice did she come into our house, and only then when her master was with her. About 2 years ago, one afternoon, she was standing at our front door by herself. As I opened the door, she insisted on coming in, which was very unusual. She walked all over the house and finally came to me in the kitchen and lay down by my feet and stayed there. After a while, I phoned my neighbor to tell her that the dog was in her house. She could not explain how the dog got out of the yard, as the gate was closed and she was in no condition to jump over the fence. Later the same day, she turned up at the neighbor's house across the street. He too, from time to time, looked after her. After he phoned the mistress of Oreo, she went to pick the dog up and took her home. The next day, Oreo became very sick, and the mistress took her to the vet. After examining her, it was determined that nothing could be done for Oreo. That night, she went down into their basement. The neighbor followed her and stayed with the dog. A few hours afterwards, she was dead. I'm convinced the dog knew that she was going to die and came to say goodbye to the people who were kind to her. Still to this day, my heart becomes heavy whenever I think of how that dog came to say, you know, thank you and goodbye.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Another one writes, my little dog Daisy was suffering from terminal cancer and had deteriorated for several days to the point that she couldn't walk or stand. But on her final day, she brightened and followed me everywhere for an hour before passing. It was as if she knew the time was at hand and she wanted to be as close to me as possible when she passed. So, wow. You know, they talk about all these last rallies, and we've certainly discussed that a lot. You know, that's, you know, they call it this terminal lucidity, and nobody can know why, whether it's with pets or with humans, and there's no medical reason for it. And they just rally, and the loved ones think that it's a miracle and they're back to normal, but it's just a way of somehow the universe allowing the person to, you know, to say goodbye.
That's so true.
Yeah.
It's difficult sometimes, I find, with people who then have lost their loved one and they haven't heard this terminology or even this phenomena. And they're like, oh, but they've gotten so much better. And so they're thinking something went awry with their medical. Possibly is this airy rallying like we're talking about.
Yeah. But here's a question that came in. This one's for you, Tom.
Okay.
Do you think that Neanderthals went to the afterlife? And if so, did their consciousness evolve?
Wow.
You haven't thought about that one.
No, I haven't. And well, I'd have to say that yes, that they, soul's eternal, so their soul went ahead. Probably similar to the pets, where they couldn't express themselves while they were here. Once they cross over, their soul is complete in a lot of ways and able to communicate and even send messages back. So I would say yes, that on both accounts for...
Well, it raises an interesting question, doesn't it? Because, so, you know, Neanderthals are like the forerunner of of humans, right? And so they had primitive thinking. So when they go to went to the afterlife and their consciousness evolved, did it evolve in the same way that ours, you know, evolves? So as you mentioned, like with pets, you know, so, you know, does a, you know, does a giraffe's consciousness evolve the same way that human consciousness does? I mean, I think that there must be limitations, you know? I mean, there must be, depending on what you were in the physical, maybe there's giraffe consciousness, or there's Neanderthal consciousness, or there's dog consciousness. But, you know, it's hard to believe. I mean, certain animal species, like, I mean, I'm watching a documentary on chimpanzees in Uganda. You know, they share more than 98% of our DNA. I mean, they're smarter than a lot of humans that I know, you know. And, you know, them and, you know, species that we know are evolved, you know, like, you know, cats and dogs and dolphins, and, you know, and so forth. You know, maybe they do have evolved, and maybe they do progress. You know, it's an interesting thing to ponder. I don't know the answer.
Well, we've certainly read plenty of accounts or speculations about how when you're on the other side that you're still, it's still a learning process that you, and some of the reasons why you come back to this realm is so that you can learn lessons that will aid you when you get to the other side. So it, so yeah, if you're going to still, if your consciousness is going to grow and evolve, then there has to be certain degrees of that. And, you know, more advanced souls. I mean, you hear about people who are here on the planet and they're referred to as old souls because it seems that they have a wisdom beyond their years. You know, that, and that's an indication that there was a more advanced consciousness that decided to come back and live in this existence. So yeah, I'd say yes, that they're... and also, I remember reading a book where it was a woman's brother had passed and was sending her information. And one of the things that he sent back is that, yeah, maybe I'll come back and just be a tree in the forest. So just because a tree in the forest stands there and doesn't do anything necessarily doesn't mean that the consciousness, that the energy, that the life force isn't an evolved life force that just decided they wanted to come back and live in the forest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I mean, you can't think in physical terms, you know. I mean, who's to say that the consciousness of the tree is less evolved than human consciousness?
Which is why we should hug our trees. They yes, need our so. Hugs.
Well, I saw a photo online today or yesterday or of a tree that was sheared after it was struck by lightning, and when you looked inside the tree, there appeared to be like a neural network that, you know, looked like a brain. It was like so intricate. Wow. It was amazing, you know.
Oh, my.
And what, you know, and these weren't roots. This was like inside the tree. It was kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
Here's a question that we get about mediums. My friend got a reading from a medium and it was great. I went to the same medium and it was a terrible reading. How can that happen?
We hear that, and also I've heard people say they've had a great reading with a medium, see the same medium at a later point, and it's not good at all, and then they still do it again with the same medium, and it's great again. So there are a number of reasons why, but just thinking about it, mediums are human too, and we all have those kind of off days, or the spirits on the other side, you know, just weren't present or ready to connect. So who knows? There's all sorts of reason.
Yeah, I mean, it may be that this, just the circumstances were not right, you know, either with the sitter or with the person in spirit or with the medium, and it, you know, it just wasn't happening. Or maybe spirits don't want to communicate through a particular medium for one reason or another. They probably know reasons that aren't apparent to us.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, it is a three-way conversation. So the spirit is involved, and the medium to make the connection so that the spirit can communicate with the loved ones has to raise their vibrations to get to a point where the spirit who has to lower their vibrations that they can meet. And some spirits and some mediums just don't, you know, get that connection. And it's not a knock on either of them. It's just, that's just the way it is, you know.
You know, I recall in our family, we had years ago, several different members of our family had wonderful readings with one of our Forever Family Foundation certified mediums. And my dad never, you know, he didn't want to hear about any of this. But near the end, nobody knew it was near the end, but Daddy laid, you know, had taken to his bed and probably just pondered the meaning of life, wondering how to get out of this life, because he just sort of felt done. And at one point when we were visiting, he goes, "So tell me again, who is it I'm supposed to go see when I'm on the other side?" So I raced and got a photograph of the medium that everybody had great success with. Yeah. And I said, "Here she is, Dad." And it was just kind of, you know, the fact that he had turned around his thinking, and we weren't in the middle of a conversation about it or anything.
Yeah. So, you know, you just made me think of a story that I, many years ago, there was one of the original volunteers of the foundation. And this was when we first started, I guess maybe in 2003 or 2004. She had, lost a daughter. But she, never would go to a medium. She just, you know, kind of wallowing in her own grief, and she was not open to the idea at all. And I remember Fran telling me that one day she met with this person, and there was like a lightness about her. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, Fran said, "Well, you know, what's different?" And she said, "I have to tell you, I went to a medium." And this is before we had the medium certification, you know, program. And she told Fran that the medium was just fantastic. You know, it was, you know, the best medium in the world. She knew everything, you know. So, and she was so glowing, and there was such a transformation with her that Fran and I decided that, really, for curiosity, not that we wanted to get the reading, but we were just wondering, you know, about the situation. So we booked the reading with this medium. We didn't use our real names, but I don't think that really would have mattered, because nobody really knew us anyway. So we did not get to the woman's home where she did the reading, and we had to wait. Family members told us to wait, and then we were led down to the basement where she conducted her readings, and she was sitting on top of a stack of pillows, like some swami, you know, like whatever. And I, Fran and I look at each other, "Okay, hold on to your hats. We're in for one here." and we sat there. I mean, it was just utterly horrible. I mean, the woman was getting nothing, and she was using every cold reading trick in the book, you know. And you know, Fran, she's like, after 10 minutes, she's like, "We're at it," you know. And, you know, me, I try to be respectful, and I said, "Well, we're here, we paid the money, let's just, you know, sit through it," you know, and we did. So, you know, when it was all done, it was like excruciating, you know, the hour. So we're leaving, and I'm talking with Fran, we're trying to figure out, how is this possible? How could this woman have such an extraordinary reading. And what I didn't know is that when this woman the conclusion that we came up with, mostly Fran did, is that if the medium or if a person in spirit wants to get a message to you, they'll use anything, as a channel. And what we found out afterwards is that this woman was driving in her car, and she turned after the reading, and she turned to her right, and her deceased daughter was sitting there. So the daughter was looking for a way to really communicate. And even though her daughter certainly recognized that this medium didn't have any gifts, she was going to, find a way to get through anyway. So, spirit wants to, that they want to get through, and they'll use any means at their disposal, But it is certainly, as you mentioned, Melissa, even sometimes people will go back to the same medium and they have a totally different experience. It's frustrating to figure out why, Another question that I've heard before, but that came in, is do people in the afterlife have the ability to change the course of events in our world?
I've heard no, but yeah. I could think about it and, formulate. I don't know. We always talk about this, you're going someplace familiar, there are a couple of ways to go. I really often go, okay, I really kind of feel like going this way. Not sure why. I could go that way, but something's telling me I should go this way. And nothing, huge or unusual ever happens. But I'm just wondering if I'm being influenced to go a certain way, or I have avoided bad accidents by not getting out of the house when I planned on it due to, one thing or another, which could have been influenced by a spirit,
I think it's kind of a tricky question, because I think that as you're talking about, we hear countless reports of people making decisions based on a voice that they heard or a vision that they had and so forth. And so I think that people in spirit will try to help their loved ones that are still in the physical world. It's sort of like on a micro level, but on the broader sense of changing the course of events of the world, I don't think so. But then again, there's another way to look at it. If they influence you to make that left turn instead of making the right that you always make, and that avoids an accident, that accident could have had repercussions throughout the universe and changed the course of the world. So you never know. But it's also, I know that one of the research centers is working on a project now where they're trying to find out if people in spirit are taking an active role in humankind and the problems that they have, and are they trying to affect the course of events. I don't know the answer to that, but so far they're not doing such a great job if they're trying.
Thinking of with the help that they may be able to give us, it's tricky, because then if something terrible happens and you think, why weren't they there to help me? How could they have allowed this? That's something people say about God. Right. How could my God have let this happen to me? So if we're going to think spirits can influence events in our lives, you kind of have to go both ways. And I don't know if I want to do that.
And it's not as simple as that, in the sense that there are things, bad things that happen to us, and I wouldn't want to say necessarily, well, on purpose, let's say, that it's part of the plan, that you are here to deal with things like that. So they're going to be put in your path. Yeah. Hardships are going to come your way. And that's all part of the learning experience. So there is that. And then on the other side, I have seen countless mediumistic readings with, well, your grandmother is here and she wants to say congratulations on the birth of your daughter. And she said she's going to be looking after your daughter. So what does that mean? That sounds like an active participation. But I also, what we're coming to a consensus here is, yes, spirit can help in small, subtle ways, and they will, but there's the big picture of the world that they cannot.
Right. Affect. And that could be by design, you know. I mean,
exactly.
You know, where it's sort of like a hands-off policy while we do our learning and growth, you know, here. But that still doesn't stop our loved ones from taking an interest in our well-being. So
yeah. Yeah.
That would make up for an interesting movie, unless it's already been done, you know. Somebody here learning, being influenced by spirit, kind of like what we've seen. Oh, let's say It's a Wonderful Life, and Clarence the Angel is helping Jimmy Stewart. But, you know, the spirit's like the young or the new. Yeah, the young spirit is wanting to jump in. And I guess it's going to be me. I'm going to want to jump in at every opportunity to help. And some wise person is going to say, no, this is one of those lessons that will help them to advance. And boy, it's going to be so hard for me to stay out of it.
Yeah.
And that's also, I mean, if you are familiar with the teachings of Eckhart Tolle, the idea that you're not in control, that you've got to let go of trying to control things and go with the flow, and you put out intentions to the universe that this is where I want to end up, and then you let go of that and go with the flow of the universe, and sure enough, that's where you end up. That basically the energy of the universe is way more powerful than your individual energy will ever be, and so let the universe do. I guess there's an expression, I think, in religious terms, is let God.
Let go and let God.
Let go and let God. And that's basically what we're saying here, is that you've got to, you can rely on spirit and the energy of the universe to take you where you are meant to be. And so there is that interaction that we can get help from spirit in that regard, but we have to, as I say, we have to let go and let it happen.
It is kind of tricky, because if you believe in that and believe you will be led, but then you're constantly questioning every little decision you make, and then to just sit back and go, well, you know, there's a plan for me. Let's see how it unfolds. But you have to be an active participant. So it's tricky.
Yeah. Well, again, going back to Eckhart Tolle, the active participant is that if something happens to you, you observe it, you recognize it, and you remove yourself from it in that way, rather than getting churned up in it and thinking that, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? No, you don't do, you just see, observe.
Yeah.
And then again, then get back into the flow. There's certainly no definitive rules on how to do with all of this, but.
And you know, that's actually a method in helping people who are grieving, that you don't fight the grief. You examine how everything is making you feel, kind of fully immersing yourself in it. If you understand that life goes both ways, so you fully immerse yourself in your grief and observe your grief, fully understanding that it will, you know, change and you'll go back to a more, I hate to say happier time, but tolerable, you know, but the bad, take the bad with the good. But it's really, really hard to discuss that with some people in grief, because it's, you know, you want to be through it.
And as Mo Hannah always says at our grief retreats, you know, the pain of grief, you have to feel it until you don't feel it anymore.
Yeah.
Here's a question for us. Have any of you actually seen an apparition?
You know, I've tried. got along. What I heard was the most haunted road or area on Long Island. Do you recall? It probably was not far from where you used to live, Bob. Mount Misery Road?
Yeah.
Melville area? That's called one of the most haunted areas, and also Sweet Hollow Road. So I would, you know, encourage Tom to take a drive down there. But you don't even know if you pass somebody, if it's an apparition or not. But I'm just, what about you? Have you actually?
I never have, no. Fran has, you know, I'd seen, she saw our daughter, you know, and then she also, one time, felt our daughter, you know, plop down on the bed, and then we saw an indentation, you know, in the blankets, you know, whatever. But I never had, you know, and that also goes back to there are many people, even though we haven't really seen one, but. There are, you know, when we talk about apparitions or ghosts, they're really just visitations, you know, from our loved ones that are figuring out how to manifest in physical form. What comes along with that in the physical world, unfortunately, is fear, you know, because people fear what they can't perceive with their physical senses. They fear the unknown, so it becomes spooky, you know. So I wish that people, instead of calling it ghosts, would just call it visitation, because that's essentially what it is. But apparitions have been written about, you know, for centuries, you know, by a lot of credible people. So maybe I'll be lucky enough to see one. I won't be afraid, I promise you that.
Yeah, I never have either. My mother did. My mother saw my father kneeling at the foot of her chair one day, and she was very excited about that and wanted it to come again. It did, you know, that was a one-time deal. And I personally, maybe, you know, corner of my eye, I thought I saw a figure or something, but never actually turned my head and saw a figure.
I didn't know that. It's interesting that your mom, you know, saw your dad, especially, with your mom coming from a religious background.
Yeah.
And you said, what did you say? You said she was excited, not fearful, you know, and that would seem to be the opposite of what the reaction that many of her friends would express, right?
Yeah, well, it was not at night, you know, it was the middle of the afternoon. She had been sitting in her chair reading, doing crosswords and that sort of thing. And I guess it nodded off, and then she woke up, and there he was. And she said he looked much younger, and he was smiling and, you know, kind of a glow about him. And so I guess there's nothing fearful about that, and then it dissipated right pretty quickly, of course. Yeah. And but yeah, she just realized it was a wonderful experience.
You know, it's a close friend of mine knows, you know, Tom's and my beliefs, and she's very religious, and you know, doesn't really wanted to have any discussion about any of this that Tom and I do, but she's told me the story several times of how her father appeared at the foot of her mother's bed soon after he had died. And the way she describes it, her mom sort of yelled at him like, "What are you doing here?" He goes, "I just want to see if you're all right." And, "Well, don't scare me like that. Don't ever do that again." And so my friend tells this story to support why she doesn't believe in any of this. And that makes no sense to me at all. And she's, I heard the story just a few weeks ago. She told it again. So it was fearful. It was a scary thing. I guess you try to avoid scary things.
Well, I recall distinctly, and I've mentioned this before, that it was a woman that was at one of our grief retreats many, many years ago, you know, and I had asked her at one point, you know, what would it take, you know, what would it finally take for you to believe, you know, that you're I think it was her daughter, you know, still existed. And she thought, and she said, "You know what? If I could see my daughter, then I would believe." No, that was a good answer. And then many years went by, and she was at another grief retreat, and I think it was like 6 or 7 years later, and she grabbed me aside and she says, "Do you remember like 6 years ago you told me, you asked me what it would take, you know, for me to believe? And I told you that, yeah, if I saw my daughter." She says, "Well, I saw my daughter." And I said, "Really?" I said, and what was it?" She said, "It scared the shit out of me." I'm like, "What?" And she said, "So I was startled, you know, and I closed my eyes. And then when I opened my eyes again, she was gone, you know." So, you know, probably her daughter who was visiting didn't want to cause any trauma to her mom. So, you know, disappeared. But that's unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, oh, yeah.
She gets what she wants. She's something that she's been hoping for 6 or 7 years. Her daughter makes it happen, and she's scared her daughter away. You know, it's like so. But it just shows you how powerful our emotions and beliefs are. You know, that we have to overcome that. You know, and that's part of what we all try to do, right? We try to mainstream some of these things.
And we do hear how I've heard this many times, that you could be out somewhere, you know, I'll just use this scenario that was told to me, dining in a restaurant. You see all the people around you at all the different tables, don't know anybody. But then at some point you turn and look at the table next to you, and it looks exactly like your daughter. So much so that the person who had this particular experience took a picture and had the photograph to show people. And then the person changed back again. You know, not that the person at the other table was doing anything, but the spirit of the daughter must have, is the word transposed or?
Transform, yeah.
Transfiguration.
Yeah, that's something that you don't see too often, but it was prevalent with some of the, you know, the physical mediums, and people would describe watching them, and their whole face would distort into something that looked completely different than the way they normally look.
I'm kind of the belief that the person at the other table's face didn't actually change,
right?
But that spirit put it into the mind of the observer and short-circuited the brain, the neurons, to say, "This is looking like me." And boom, then they look across and go, "Oh my gosh, that looks like her." The person doesn't actually look like her. Now, the question is, she took a picture. Did the picture look like the daughter?
It did.
Well, there you go. That blows that theory.
Well, The thing is, yeah, you'd have to show that picture to like 10 different people and get responses. To get
Maybe. You know, there was a time, Bob, a couple of years ago when Tom and I were in one of the supermarkets, we both saw someone and we thought it looked like Fran. Separately, we both saw the same person. And we're like, did you?
Yeah. I was standing there and Melissa turned and says, look over there. Who does that look like? And I knew right away who she was talking about. That was pretty interesting.
She was reaching for ice cream toppings. I don't know if that's something Fran would be stocking.
If it was chocolate, yeah, maybe. Hey, listen, nothing to do with apparitions or the afterlife, but Fran and her sister were little more than a year apart, and they looked very much alike, especially when they were younger. And on more than one occasion, I grabbed her sister's behind.
So, you know, and Fred has read your book. You've done more than that.
Of course, she looked nothing like her, but he's sticking to this story.
Yeah, well, you know, it was even, it gets even stranger, you know, because as you know, like from my book, that's how I met Fran, because my friend from college was going out with Fran's sister, and I went on a blind date. So, yeah, it was pretty freaky. Here's a question that we've discussed before, but how do you explain people knowing that their life will be short? We don't have a lot of time, and that's a long one, but I guess it could be a case of people catching a glimpse of the future, or maybe
You had it in your own family, right?
Yeah, I had it with my daughter. You know, always felt that, and she used to write about it. You know, so I mean, how did she know? I mean, I don't know. I've thought about that a lot. You know, and it was clearly evident that that's what she thought. You know, maybe there is a plan. You know, to life, or you know, maybe. Just some sort of inner knowing that we can't describe that was, you know, always with her. But it really is strange. A great many people have, you know, I've heard stories, countless stories of people that knew that, you know, and then it turns out to be true.
And yeah, we've certainly read books and heard that.
Well, certainly. I mean, Bailey's writings, it's there in her writings. Yeah. And then we had Dave Kane at the last grief retreat, and his son Nicky, who died when he was 19 or something, had written a play when he was in high school about somebody who dies young and then comes back as a spirit to help people, and that was 2 years before he died. So, yeah, I think there is an inner knowing somehow.
Maybe they're connected with that. Maybe the spirits who that will be their story, arrive with an inner knowing. I know when kids are really young and their worlds are very tiny, they can tap into where they came from and still connect, you know, with that other side until their lives start to fill out and more is happening as they get older. But maybe those who are to have the short life are given that gift of knowing, sort of make the most of it.
That's plausible, you know. That's a way of looking at it. You know, given that gift of having, you know, having that knowledge. Well, I think we've reached the end of our time. We have Lourdes Swanson's Global Peace Prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And
now it's time to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.